honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back, Hometown Heroes, finishing up a special Christmas edition of the program. One thing that was unfolding 80 years ago this week, the saga of Wake Island, that Pacific outpost where servicemen and civilians alike were overrun by the Japanese. Joe Goicoechea had gone to Wake Island as a civilian contractor. This first of his four Christmases in captivity would represent a very rude awakening.
December the 8th we was hit. December the 23rd we gave in. And we knew around 22nd or 23rd that it was getting close, because they said, boy, the ships will be here in 24 hours or something. It never would show up. So after a while, you just gave up on it.
And I'm sure you never had contemplated spending Christmas as a prisoner of war.
They took us to the airport, all of us. They had machine guns around us and all, and we thought, boy, this is it, you know. And we wasn't in too good a shape. I wasn't, in a way, and a lot of other guys worse than me. What we were told later, that the Japanese got orders from Tokyo to not to kill us. So then on Christmas Day, 24th or 25th, we all marched to our camp, the good camp that we lived. But it was the barracks and everything. It was hit pretty hard and all, but you could still go in and seek shelter, you know, from the sun and rain and so forth. And that's where we went, and then we went on details. Japs had us go on details, because they wanted to know where those Oki guns were. Oki means big in Japanese. Well, the biggest guns we had is a 5-inch. We told none, but we went different places and found different things. We found a lot of our dead guys that crawled back in their holes and died. They were wounded, you know. And after a while, in the heat and everything, a man kind of smells a little bit. Boy, I tell you, it's terrible.
I know what happened to you from there. You were a prisoner of war until the end of the war, from the start of the war to the end of the war. If you had known that then, if someone had told you you were going to be held captive for nearly 4 years from that point, would you have believed that you could make it that long in those conditions?
No, I didn't even give it any thought.
Because you have no idea. I mean, this could go on. You could be never get out of a POW situation.
Our mentality was different. We just seemed to be full of cement. Just solidified our head was and everything. Hell, and then some of them kind of went a little nutty. And so it takes all kinds of people.
And I know you ended up in four different prisoner of war camps at the hands of the Japanese, and I know there are a lot of stories you can share from that, and I want to hear a few of them, but I'm curious, when you look at that in the big picture, when you look of surviving 44 months as a prisoner of war with very little to eat, not always treated very well, what did you think about that kept you believing you could still have a life after this? Because a lot of guys, as you said, it made them go nuts. They didn't survive. You made it through. Why was that? What was your key?
Attitude. Oh, gosh. I used to joke with the Japanese. We met some good Japanese that didn't have to be good to us. We'd tell them all kinds of stories. They asked me if I was married, and I said, yeah. And I got two waifus. And another Jap, a few days later, asked me about it, and a waifu, and I said, yeah. Three or four, I tell them different stories. And one if I had any kids, and I said, yeah. So one time, about three or four of those Jap soldiers had come over there, and ones I talked to at different times in a week or 2 week time. They looked at me and everything, shook their head and said, dummy done nigh. He's crazier than hell.
Finally figured you out, huh?
Yeah. But a sense of humor. That's what I feel that kept me alive. I kept going. I prayed a lot. Yeah. I'm a pretty Christian. I mean, I always did pray. I was taught to pray, and I always did pray. And I feel that's the reason I'm here.
What do you pray in a situation like that?
Gosh, it's hard to tell you. You're praying for yourself, that's for sure.
Get me out of here?
Save me and this and that. And oh, you were scared of being wounded, seriously. That was it, because we had no way. We had two doctors there and the medics, but the hospital was blown up. Everything was taken out to take care of them. They had really no way to really take care of the wounded soldiers, or wounded people, I should say. God, some of them are in bad shape. A lot of them lost a leg or an arm or something.
Four different camps and 44 months as a prisoner. What would you say was the the hardest thing to endure? I'm sure you didn't have very good things to eat. I'm sure you lost a lot of weight. But what was the most challenging or most threatening experience that you faced?
Well, so much. In the first year, we was in China, the prison camp there at Wusong. It was cold, icy. We had no clothes. Our feet, gee whiz, just almost cry with the pain in your feet and stuff. And it was miserable. And they gave us two blankets, each prison. You could put the blankets and don't see through them. Two of you get together. You put a blanket underneath on the deck, wooden deck, and then you put the others over. You never take your clothes off. If you had any other clothes, you put them all on. But that was the first winter in China.
And again, that was just the first of four Christmases he spent as a prisoner of war. Just throw that in your perspective as you evaluate your own outlook this holiday season. We'll hear from another ex-prisoner of war for whom one particular Christmas carol has strong meaning in a moment. But first, a sailor who spent the final 75 years of his life cringing anytime he heard Bing Crosby singing this.
I'm dreaming of a Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
Of course, the whole point of that song, White Christmas, was to bring comfort to many a serviceman longing to be back with his family during World War II, and it did. But for Mike Wanty aboard the USS Lardner, that song became associated with a young man who paid a heavy personal price for the cause of our freedom.
And I don't like to talk about it, and if I do tell you, I may crack in talking about it, but I'll tell you, it happened at Christmas time. This is why I hate Christmas, in a way. I don't know if I can tell you or not. Mm. It happened at Bougainville. We helped the Marines go ashore, and then the bodies started coming back, and they would come back in baskets. And one of the, you shouldn't have done this. This boy, they put on the wardroom table. He had no arms, no legs, and he was burned over most of his body. And all we could do was give him morphine, and he wanted to hear White Christmas all the time. It was a record. He would play over and over and over and over. And it took us about 10 hours, I guess, to get to a forward hospital on Vella La Vella. And the doctor said to me, he says, I won't let him die, Mike. I'll get him ashore. And he did, but he died once he got there. But he didn't die on the ship. I've always felt bad. I never got his name or his father and mother. I've always wanted to write to her. He was about 17, Marine, nice young guy. I
started this. It's okay. I'm sorry, Mike.
You don't realize. I happens if I ever think about it. And at Christmas time, it's double. They keep playing White Christmas. I've gotten used to it. But to talk about it, it's different.
But over the years, if you're somewhere and White Christmas comes
you
on,
you never can forget it.
You said your whole life you've wished you had gotten his name so you could have written his mother. What do you think you would have written to his mother? What would you have told her?
That he was brave and he thought of his family. He was a farm boy, I think from Ohio.
Mike Wanty explaining why that song, White Christmas, triggered so many painful memories for him over the years. Don Cooley is on the other side of that spectrum, part of a massive surrender of troops from the 106th Infantry Division that had become surrounded during the Battle of the Bulge. Cooley had a different piece of Christmas music seared into his memory for a very different reason.
My job as a battalion clerk, I happen to have in my pocket another blank sheet called a morning report where you list the names of everybody. And so I passed this thing around the boxcar and had everyone sign it that was in there. I think there were 60 of us then. The third day we were strafed because the boxcars were not labeled, and these were, we think, British plays. So they opened the doors and we got out to dive in the ditch. Yeah, it was cold by then. But the point I want to make is that they did run along this train, long train, and open up the doors when the strafing occurred. The trouble is, strafing's over before they could get to two or three cars.
And when you say these boxcars aren't labeled, what you're saying is if they had said POW on the top.
Red Cross. Yeah.
Then the planes would have known not to shoot.
Yeah, that's right.
But they don't know.
They don't know.
And so you guys are helpless inside this boxcar, and if they don't open the doors, you're going to have a lot of guys die.
That's right, or you hope that pilot is a bad shot. Some guys took off at that point and didn't come back to the boxcar.
Did you think about trying that?
Not a bit.
Why not?
Well, I think it was because if I had thought about it, I think I would have nixed it, because I think it was the fourth day into Germany, third or fourth. That's a pretty long way to get back through the lines.
So you knew.
And no food.
And wherever you're going to be, it's German-held territory. So the likelihood of you getting through all that and back to American territory is rough. And are you getting pretty hungry by now?
Yes.
Are you getting scared?
No, I don't think so. We were with friends. That helped so much.
Well, and you said you celebrated your 21st birthday in a boxcar. I don't think that's how most young men imagine spending their 21st birthday.
Well, I wouldn't interview very many people with that question, but I think I know the answer, so I don't need to.
Did it occur to you that it was your birthday? Did you mark the occasion?
Oh, sure. The day after Christmas.
Well, I guess I should ask you about Christmas, too, then, huh?
Well, there was a significant thing. We started singing Christmas carols in the boxcar, and I get emotional about that. There was another fellow among our group, had a good voice and knew the words, but pretty soon other people chimed in, and the irony, of course, is that that's a German carol, Silent Night.
So you're somewhere in Germany, you're prisoners in a boxcar, freezing and starving.
Well, we weren't freezing in there. From that standpoint, we were better off than the soldiers that didn't get caught. It got down to the coldest winter to date there in Germany, and we were sheltered. And that was something to be thankful for.
But here you are, 60 GIs, singing Silent Night inside a boxcar?
Yeah. Well, it was Christmas.
How did it sound?
They didn't sing happy birthday to me the next day, but I don't think I told them anyway. They might have. You know, what do you do? You're just there all day sitting on your duff and chatting. Because we were in that boxcar for 9 days.
Well, and I imagine you've probably heard Silent Night hundreds of times in the 75 years since then.
Sure. Wonderful song.
Can you listen to it now without thinking of that boxcar on Christmas 1944?
No.
And what do you think about when your mind goes back to that moment with
those
guys?
Oh, I cloud up.
You might be the only one from that boxcar who's still here.
It's very possible.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth or make it more than it was, but I can sense just from your description and your emotion that this was a real powerful moment for you.
Oh, yes.
What did it do for you?
Made me feel better, probably.
Gave you a little sliver
and
of hope.
And also, it was another bond with the others that were singing with us, which we needed at that time.
Ever since I heard that story from Don Cooley, I picture that scene he described every time I hear Silent Night. Before we run out of time on this Christmas edition of Hometown Heroes, just one more encouragement for you. Chances are there's somebody in your network of friends and family who's part of our armed forces right now and maybe not able to gather with family the way most of us get to. Why not take just a few minutes and let them know that they've been missed at your family holiday gatherings? And if you're a praying person, maybe say a little prayer for them as we conclude this Christmas season. I guess I can be one of the first to wish you a Happy New Year as well, and we'll look forward to many more veterans sharing their stories over these very same airwaves in 2022. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.